I asked you to get out a pen and a piece of paper, and it'll take just a minute. I want to ask you to write down as many of the Ten Commandments as you can write down. If you want to, take the time here, write down as many of the Ten Commandments as you can write down. We'll find out just how spiritual you all are before tonight's over. I've got a leg up. I got to be honest with you. I've been studying this thing for a while, so I have a little bit of an advantage over you. One of the books that I've been reading on the Ten Commandments is a little bit dated, but I think in some ways it will speak a message. There was a 1988 Gallup poll, a poll done in 1988, that said that 85% of Americans believe that the Ten Commandments were still binding. And this was 1988, nearly 30 years ago now. But of those that said that the Ten Commandments were still binding, only 15% of them could name five of them. So if you can name five of them, you're doing better than that 15%. How'd you do? The next question I would have for you is, can you tell me from the Word of God, Brother Robbie, where these things are? You ask, so I'll pick on you. Where can I go to the Bible to find the Ten Commandments? Exodus chapter 20. So if you want to follow along this evening, turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 20. How did you do? Now, you don't have to give me an audible answer, but ask yourself an answer. How did you do? Do you know the Decalogue? Or the Ten Words, or the Ten Commandments. We're beginning tonight a series. You see it on the wall here, the Ten Commandments. Loving obedience to a loving God. That's what we'll subtitle this series. Exodus chapter number 20. Anybody get all 10? Yeah, I know you got the Bible. That's a big help. Tonight we'll begin a series that'll take us several weeks on the Ten Commandments. And why they still matter. Why they still matter. Exodus chapter number 20, verse 1 says, "And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Number 1, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Verse 4, number 2, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Verse 7, number 3, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain." You missed that one. Number 4 is in verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Verse 12 is the fifth commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. Verse number 13 is the sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill, or thou shalt not commit murder. The seventh one is verse 14, thou shalt not commit adultery. The eighth one is verse 15, thou shalt not steal. The ninth one is verse 16, thou shalt not bear false witness or lie. And the tenth commandment is thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet. This is what is certainly known as the Ten Commandments, and I'll refer to it as the law just in general, or the Ten Commandments, or the Decalogue. If you hear me use that terminology, the Decalogue just means, deca means 10 and log means word, so the 10 words. In fact, that's the exact rendering out of the Hebrew language, the Decalogue, the 10 commandments or the 10 words. And I just want to study them this evening together and give some thought to them and why they matter and do they still apply. Just a few weeks ago, on June the 28th in Little Rock, Arkansas, less than 24 hours after it had been placed, a 6-foot monument of the Ten Commandments was placed in the courtyard, the courthouse, a 6-foot monument of the Ten Commandments was destroyed by a man who drove his pickup truck into that statue of the Ten Commandments and or monument and destroyed it, shattered it all to pieces. Beautiful stone engraving of the Ten Commandments. It had been money had been raised to put there by private funds. The Arkansas legislature had passed a law stating that they could place the Ten Commandments there at the courthouse. And less than a day later, a man took his pickup truck, drove up through the courthouse lawn, and destroyed the monument. Now, in all honesty, this man has been diagnosed with some mental health issues. In fact, this is the second monument of the Ten Commandments that he had destroyed. But there's a video of it. You can look at it online. And his words were, "Oh my goodness, freedom. Freedom." And even though he may have some mental health issues, I think his words still ring true and represent how many people in our country feel about the Ten Commandments today. We want to destroy them so that we can have freedom. Or so that's how they think, anyway. If we can simply rid ourselves of the law of God, then we'll have freedom. This Decalogue, this Ten Commandments, had a small plaque. In fact, I bet some of you have got that very same wooden-backed, gold-plated or bronze-plated copy of the Ten Commandments. We had that when I was at home, when I was growing up. Every time you walked down the hall, there was the Ten Commandments. You couldn't miss it. It was there, and I read it I don't know how many times, and I really do believe that's one of the reasons why people want the Ten Commandments gone. If you will just follow that train of thought through, if there is law, moral absolutes, if there is a law that rings true, then that demands that there is a lawgiver. If there's a law, there must be a lawgiver. And if there is a lawgiver, and he has given a law, then there must also be a certain punishment for breaching or breaking that law. And this is one of the reasons, I believe one of the prime reasons why our society, America, and I speak of it in a general sense, America as a whole, has done everything possible, and I believe there's a satanic effort behind it as well, manipulating men, to rid themselves and this nation of the Ten Commandments. Get it out of the schools, get it out of the courthouse, get it out of the minds of the people. We don't want that God-given moral law in front of us. If there's a law, there's a lawgiver. We don't want to be held accountable to that law. We want to be held accountable to a lawgiver. We don't want to be reminded of any punishment that may come as a result of breaking this law. I share with you one other story. In 1980, the United States Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision that the school children of Kentucky, and this became nationwide, but that the school children in Kentucky had the constitutional right, listen to these words, not to be assaulted by the presence of the Ten Commandments on their classroom wall. The court's majority revealed its rationale in part. Listen to this as I quote what was written by the U.S. Supreme Court at this time. They said, if the posted copies of the Ten Commandments are to have any effect at all, it will be to induce the school children to read, meditate upon, perhaps to venerate and obey the commandments. However desirable this might be as a matter of private devotion, it is not a permissible state objective under the Establishment Clause. Now that's a long way of going around and saying this. In short, the court ruled we don't want to have a display of the Ten Commandments because some of the students just might obey them. It's in short what they said. We don't want that Ten Commandments, and these children should not be forced to have to look at these Ten Commandments because they might just learn them, and live by them. And I would ask, what would be so wrong with that? Could you answer that for me this evening? I've talked to people, and I'm not trying to sound like a super saint, some great guy that witnesses all the time, but when I've talked to people, I've asked them, how do you feel about God's moral law? How do you feel about the Ten Commandments? And some of them are a little bit indifferent. Some of them are very cold towards it. Others will say, yeah, I think they're a good rule to live by, this type of thing. But I've asked people, what would be so bad about living in a society that was governed, where the people wanted to obey the Decalogue? What would be so bad about that? Wouldn't you like to be able to go to bed at night, not have to lock your doors, and not be afraid? Because people were governed by a law that said, thou shalt not kill, commit murder, or thou shalt not steal. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to get out of your cars, not have to lock the door right behind you and have people break in and steal? Wouldn't it be nice if everyone was honest with you? I don't know about you. I think I probably do. I hate to be lied to. Don't you hate to be lied? Don't you hate it? Somebody looks you in the eyes and lies to you. Brother Gerald, it'd be great if we lived in a society where 27-year-old girls didn't get murdered. What's so wrong with the Ten Commandments? What's so bad? What is so horrible about living in a nation or a society or even a small community that would be governed by the Ten Commandments? And my answer to that is there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the law of God. As a matter of fact, Paul will write in the book of Romans and say, not only is there nothing wrong with the law of God, he'll write and say that the law is good and holy and just. You see, the problem, dear friends, is not with the law. The problem is with the human heart. And you cannot. It amazes me. And I'm trying not to get political again and from the pulpit, but it amazes me as we see what I would call, this is my opinion, what I would call a liberal agenda to push God and Christ and the commandments out of the public eye, out of the classroom, out of the courthouse, out of the public eye. But then in turn try to legislate morality and try to pass laws to make things fair. It's just silly. It is impossible. You can't legislate. You can't bring in enough laws to make people holy. We can't even live by the 10 we've got, given to us by God. There's nothing wrong with the law. The problem is with the human heart. I think about how different our society would be without crime, without murder, without drugs, without gangs. Some of us were talking here the other day, or I was talking to somebody, I don't remember exactly what it was. We were talking the other day, and if you've been down Perry, you've been to downtown Perry, you see they're putting this nice new sidewalk in. And it's nice brick. I mean, it's pretty. Looks good. I mean, there's your tax dollars going right there for that sidewalk over there. And they've put these pretty lamps up that ties together downtown and up here to the Ag Center. Obviously, our little town, the Chamber of Commerce, City Council men and women, they're trying to tie together downtown Perry and the money that comes in at the Ag Center. They're trying to tie those things together, which is fine. That's a notable cause, but the problem is, I don't know anybody who wants to walk from point A to point B, especially late at night. You can put a gorgeous sidewalk up and you put lampposts up, but that ain't going to change the human heart. And the fact that even in our small town, who among you would want to walk at night out through here? And the answer is none of us would. It grieves me. I come over here to this church and I have to lock up the doors. We went and purchased Bibles for our two graduates here this year. And do you know that she took that box that Bible was in and she run it on that magnetic thing Because they put one of those barcodes, one of those magnetic strips in there, because they had people stealing Bibles from them, from the Christian bookstore. People were going in and stealing Bibles. I thought, you got to be a low-down somebody to steal a Bible. You know, unless God intervenes, they got to be a special place for somebody like that that would steal a Bible. And I mean, somebody needed it to read it, obviously. That's one thing. But you know that's not what they're doing with the Bible. What would be wrong with a society governed by God's moral law that rape and sex trafficking and incest and all these things were far removed from us? That would seem like a utopian society to me, rather than something that men try to run from. These Ten Commandments bear, or cause us to bear, guilt and responsibility. I've tried to think of the various reasons why our nation has pushed away from the law of God, and it is because, number one, they don't want to hear about any moral absolutes, and there are moral absolutes. When you're studying something, you can't help but bring it in. It's in your mind, you're studying it. And just on Sunday, I was preaching on Sunday night on that atrocious story that we studied out of Judges 19. My mind, I just couldn't help but think about this. If there are no moral absolutes, if there is no law, no divine law, no lawgiver, if there's no divine standard by which all men will be judged and every man is his own law, that's not freedom. That's not a life of leisure and liberty. That is a dangerous anarchy. A dangerous anarchy. This idea that there are no moral absolutes, you can't push the Ten Commandments on me, you can't tell me how to live, this kind of thing, it sounds real good unless you give it just a few minutes thought. If there is no Ten Commandments, there is no moral law, if every man can do what is right in his own sight, as we see in the book of Judges, then everything is arbitrary. Everything is arbitrary. I know I said it Sunday night, but the reason it came out Sunday night so strong is because I've been studying and prepping for this. But there is, without the law, there's no accountability. Just a very shallow example, if you would. What would it be like to travel in this nation or go through Atlanta? That's maybe not a good example there. If there were not traffic laws. Just imagine what it would be like without traffic laws. And everybody just said, you know what, forget. We want to be free. We don't want to be yoked down by the bondage of some rules and legislation. We just want to do and live how we want to live. So we abolish all traffic laws. You wouldn't have freedom. You'd have a mess on your hands. That's what you'd have. I said Atlanta because I'm not sure when you're traveling through Atlanta, they pay much attention to the traffic laws up there anyway. If you can just get through there alive, you're doing pretty good. But all that being said, we and I use this again as a generality, we as American people have become more and more to where we will not bow to accountability, responsibility. We will, and I just use this in a general sense. If in 1988 only 15% of the people could name five commandments, how do you think it is now? We don't want accountability. We won't. And the truth about it is we're cutting our own throats. Would you look with me to the book of Deuteronomy in chapter number 5? The book of Deuteronomy in chapter number 5. The Ten Commandments are listed in two separate places. Exodus chapter 20 is one of them. Deuteronomy 5 is the other. Now listen to this. Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law. The book of Deuteronomy is given after the 40 years in the wilderness. You remember, the children of Israel had just came out of Exodus, and God leads them to Mount Sinai, and that's when He hands down in Exodus 20. That's when He thunders from Mount Sinai and takes his finger and he carves out with the very finger of God. He carves out the two tables of stone. Now, Deuteronomy is given some 40 years later, after the children of Israel have wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. That, you remember that previous generation, what happened to them? They all died in the wilderness, right? Because they did not believe God. Anyone over the age of 20, if my memory serves, died in the wilderness. Anyone over that age died in, anyone under that could have lived. But now that they are about to enter into the promised land, really Deuteronomy, the whole book could be summed up in three sermons that Moses preached to the children of Israel before he went up into Mount Pisgah and died there. And so now, to this younger generation who either weren't born or were young when they went to Mount Sinai, to this younger generation, Moses again gives the Decalogue, the 10 words, the 10 commandments. He hands it to them. But I'm interested in you noticing some of the words here. If you look at Deuteronomy in chapter 5, verses 6 down through verse 21 is the giving of the Ten Commandments the second time to the children of Israel. But look at verse 22, Deuteronomy 5 and verse 22. These words the Lord spake unto all your assembly in the mount out of the midst of the fire of the cloud and of the thick darkness with a great voice. And he added no more, and he wrote them in two tables of stone and delivered them unto me. But what do you say to a people? What do you say to a people who want to break loose the shackles of the Ten Commandments, who want to live the way they want to live and don't want accountability and responsibility? What do you say to them? Look at verse 28. And the Lord heard the voice of your words when ye spake unto me. And the Lord said unto me, this is Moses, I have heard the voice of the words of this people, which they have spoken unto thee. They have well said all that they have spoken, Moses and the Lord. Notice verse 29. This is God speaking, verse 29. Oh, that there were such an heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. God's laws are not grievous. His commandments are not like an anchor around our neck, dragging us down into misery, into the depths of despair. That's not what His law is. His law is given to liberate us, to give us freedom. Do you see this? Where God says, I wish I had the capacity to preach it as beautifully as it is written in verse 29, where God, that there were such an heart of them. I just wish that they had the passion, the desire to fear me and to keep my commandments. I wish that they had this desire, because it would be, what does he say, well with them. It would be good for them. To a nation that is becoming increasingly anti-God, anti-Christ, anti-law, we're hurting ourselves because these commandments that God has given to us are for our good. They're for our safety, our health, our protection. They're not a yoke of bondage. They are freedom. They are liberty. So you ask, do they still matter? Yes, they still matter. Should we learn them, memorize them, and try to obey them? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, when I just preached a couple of weeks ago, what is the greatest commandment in the law? What did Jesus say when he was asked, what's the greatest commandment in the law? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, body, soul, and strength. And what is the second commandment? Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, right? Do you realize what Christ is doing there? He's summarizing the Decalogue. on those two tables, the first four verses, I'm sorry, the first four commandments deal with our relationship to God. The last six commandments deal with our relationship to men. The first four, no other gods, no graven image, not taking the Lord's name in vain, remembering the Sabbath. This shows reverence for God. This is how we respect God. This is vertical towards God. The second table, two tables of stone. The second table, honor your father and mother. Do not kill, do not steal, do not lie, do not commit adultery, do not covet. This is how we show respect to our fellow man. Jesus summarizes in the Gospels numerous times. He says, here is what God demands and requires. Keep the law. Obey the Ten Commandments. Love God with everything and love your neighbor as yourself. This is what God requires. This is what God demands. Love for Him, love for fellow man. You want to know what pleases God? Obey Him. To obey is better than to sacrifice. We have taken the Ten Commandments, pushed them away from our kids. If you went out here on the street and asked your average teenager, name for me the Ten Commandments, you'd probably want to lay down and cry right there on the hot sidewalk, on that newly brick sidewalk they got down there. You want to lay down and cry on it. And we're hurting ourselves because these things were given to us for our good, to grant us a certainty and a surety for our future. This is what our God requires of us. Love to Him, love to one another. But don't get the idea. Don't get the idea that these Ten Commandments didn't show up and didn't matter until Mount Sinai. I'm just trying to give you an introductory, some overall thoughts here. It was murder when Cain slew Abel. It was murder. And even though that was probably a couple thousand years, 1,500 years before Mount Sinai, it was still a breach of God's moral law. You see, the truth about this is men can try to drive the Ten Commandments away from the public eye, but the problem is that we still got the law of God written on our hearts. Amen. The conscience of a man knows that it's wrong to steal. Even these young people out here, they may not be able to quote the Ten Commandments, but their conscience will bear witness that they know it's wrong to do certain things. They may not care, but they know. A child knows it's wrong to lie to their parents. A child knows that it's wrong to steal. We have the law of God written on our hearts in God's creative order. He made us with an understanding, though it is twisted and tainted because of the fall, because of our sin nature, still we know deep down right and wrong. We know that when God says thou shalt not commit adultery, God's right. That's a wrong thing to do. We know that when God has said in His Word that we're not to lie, we know that. Our nature, we have that knowledge. So don't get the idea that the moral law only applied to Israel. No. Or that the moral law only applies to the Christian today. No. When Abraham lied and said, that's not my wife, that's my sister, he broke God's moral law and he knew that it was wrong. Homosexuality was an egregious sin. It was breaking God's law by committing adultery in the city of Sodom long before Moses set foot on Mount Sinai. So this pattern, what we have in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, is really just God taking His moral law that He engrafted on the heart of every person and putting it together in two tables and 10 rules. giving us 10 words to live by. I want you to stop and meditate on something. Name one sin that you could commit that would not fall under one breach of the Ten Commandments or more. And if you'll stop and think about it, there's not one single sin that you could come up with that wouldn't in some way fall under the Ten Commandments in some way. So God takes that engrafted law that's on the fallen nature, our hard-hearted, calloused old nature, He takes it and He hands it to Moses in a way that it can be understood and really just summarized into 10 words. And says, now you want to please me? Here's how you live. In our fallen nature, in fact, it won't hurt, and I'm going to quit soon, but it won't hurt to look at this. Look at Romans chapter number 2, just so you know I'm not making this up as we go along. Look at Romans chapter 2 and see what it says about this. The book of Romans in chapter number 2. I don't have time to get in all the background behind this, but in chapter 2 and verse 14, Romans 2:14, for when the Gentiles which have not the law, they weren't handed the tablets like the Jews were, right? But they do by nature the things contained in the law, obey or do what the law says, having not the law or a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts, the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. And that's a lot of language right there, but very simply he's saying the Gentiles who weren't at Mount Sinai, who weren't handed the two tables of stone, still know right from wrong. Even though they didn't have the summarized law like what God gave you, still on their conscience they know right from wrong. And when they break the law, they excuse themselves or accuse others of it. Even our fallen Adamic nature knows right from wrong. So when we take these Ten Commandments and we expound them and we try to build on them and talk more about them, don't get the idea that this doesn't apply to today. It's still applied before Mount Sinai and it still applies today. So many people want to take the Old Testament and discard it, and especially the law, and say we're done with it. But the law has a purpose today. Now, let's be clear about this as I close. The purpose of the law never has been to save a single person. It's never been the purpose of the law. You know what the law is there for? The Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. It's not to make us holy, but it's to show us how wicked that we are. In fact, Galatians, I believe, 3:24 says that the law is our schoolmaster that brings us to Christ. That's an interesting word, that word schoolmaster. And it has the idea of well-to-do, prominent Roman families would hire someone to teach and train their children, either to personally school them or educate them or to take them to school and back, something, I guess, today a loose vernacular would be a nanny, if you would. But prominent Roman families during biblical times would hire someone to nurture and raise their children. And Paul says that's what the law does. It takes us to Christ. It teaches us we need Christ. This is not a shocking revelation to you, but nobody in this building has perfectly kept the law. Not one person here this evening has lived every single day in direct obedience to the Ten Commandments. I've broken it and you've broken it. And there's the beauty of it, because that's what the law does. So there's too much preaching today about grace and not enough law. There needs to be preaching on grace, but we need the law. It is the law that breaks the heart. It is the law that God uses to show the sinner, here's where you failed. And the only hope you have is to trust in someone who hasn't failed. Jesus said, I didn't come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. to live by it, to do what we don't do. As a matter of fact, Jesus Christ came born under the law in the likeness of our flesh and was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. He's the only one. Jesus is the only one that has always lived in perfect obedience to the Decalogue. He always, and you go down the list, he always honored his father and mother. He always had God first. He never made a graven image. He never took the Lord's name in vain. He remembered the Sabbath day to keep it holy. We'll get into that. He didn't care one bit about the Pharisees' laws, but he cared about what God's laws was. Never killed, stole, committed adultery, never bore false witness, never coveted any what anybody else had. He always lived perfectly by the moral law. And that's the divine exchange in salvation. When God shows us our failure and his perfection, we put our faith in Christ. And our wickedness was placed on him at Calvary, and his righteousness is put on us. There, that's that glorious work of substitution that Christ came to do for us. Mount Sinai leads us to Calvary. Isn't that sweet? Mount Sinai leads us to Calvary. We don't, too many people, and if there's a man standing here at this door here knocking not too long ago, and I said, "Do you know the Lord?" "Well, I try to live by the Ten Commandments." Well, guess what, buddy? It ain't going to happen. It's not going. You're not going to do it. You're going to fail. What are you going to do when you fail? Now, living a moral life is fine and good, but if you're doing that to save yourself, you're in trouble. Some people treat the Ten Commandments like they're ten ladder rungs. You can climb your way up into heaven, but that's not how it is. The law is given to break us, to show us our need of a substitute, Christ who was holy. Having been saved, we're not done with the law, though. We're not done with these commandments, because now it should be our desire to walk in obedience to what our Christ, our God, our Lord has done for us. I'll get into this a little bit more next week, but we run right past it when we read it. But in Exodus 20, it opens with, "I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Now live this way." Live this way. We run past those words, and what is being said there is, you should obey me because of who I am and what I've done for you. I'll get into that next week, but that's essentially what is being said. This verse came to mind. I'll read it and I'll be done. Deuteronomy 6. "These are the commandments, the statutes, the judgments, which the Lord your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land whither you go to possess it, that thou mightest fear the Lord thy God, to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee, thou and thy son and thy son's sons, all the days of thy life, that thy days may be prolonged. What does your Lord, your God, require of you but to obey him and to fear him and to walk in all of his commandments?" This is where we're going. Loving obedience. God gave us these laws to take us to Christ. And then he says, "If you want to please me, obey them." Loving obedience to a loving God. There's the Ten Commandments. It's not a knockdown, "You guys can't have any fun, what a miserable life it is." No, it is freedom to obey God, freedom to listen to him.